Folks, today's episode is brought to you by SiriusXM Satellite Radio. You may already know that SiriusXM brings you the deepest variety of commercial-free music for every genre and for every mood. That's where you hear the biggest names in talk, entertainment and comedy, and hundreds of hand-curated music channels designed to fit every mood. It's where you get news from every source. It's where you can listen to the newly launched Fish Radio, woo! In addition to Jam On, The Grateful Dead Radio, Pearl Jam Radio, Tom Petty Radio, and many more. It's where you can listen to top comedy channels such as Kevin Hart's Laugh Out Loud Radio and Netflix Is a Joke Radio, and sports talk radio from Barstool to ESPN and more to keep you up to date on the latest news in the sports world. Most people think you need a car to enjoy SiriusXM, but you don't. Subscribe now and listen outside the car, on your phone, online, and at home. And get your first 3 months for just a dollar. Visit SiriusXM.com/amigos, A-M-I-G-O-S, to see offer details and to subscribe and start listening today. That's SiriusXM, no car required. What's up? This is Mike Fenoya from Amigos, and Amigos Podcast is In the Loop, the legion of Osiris Podcasts. Osiris is creating a community that connects people like you with podcasts and live experiences about artists and topics you love. Check out OsirisPod.com and stay in the loop. Hey, what's up? Welcome back to Amigos. It's your host, Mike Fenoya. We're back. We took a little holiday break, and here we are. We're back together. It's nice to be here with you again. I hope it's nice to hear me again. Folks, let's get the business out of the way, and then we'll talk. I have Carl Denson on the podcast today, which is fun. I love Carl, and we'll get into that in a moment. But folks, if you are listening on iTunes and you haven't already done so, if you have, thank you. But if you haven't, a rating and a review goes quite a long way. So if you could give us a 5-star rating and a review and tell us why you're enjoying the show, follow on Twitter and Instagram at AMIGOSPOD and MIKEFINOIA. You could join the Facebook discussion group, the Amigos Podcast Discussion Group, where we share stuff. It's been a little dormant, which I'll get into in a moment. And you can head over to Spotify and listen on there and keep your eyes out for my little one-off project, Still Chasing, that will be coming out soon. I'm working very closely with Mike Shields, another Osiris family member from Welcome to the Party, Pal, Across the Margin, and a lot of great projects. Very fun, good friend of mine, smart dude. He's helping me out with this project and immensely. And it's going to be a fun look back on a quarter century or so of seeing shows. And if you want, head over to MikeFenoya.com for some dates. I don't have a ton of road coming up on purpose, but if you are listening on today is the 11th of September, tomorrow at 10:30, I'll have my show at the Fat Black Pussycat in the West Village at 10:30. It's me and a couple buddies, Mike Cannon, Liz Mealy, Amy Shanker, doing longer sets. So you can go to ComedyCellar.com for tickets to that. The next weekend, I'm at Foxwoods and the Wilbur Theater with my hero, Dave Attell. So excited for those shows. I'll be adding more and more dates throughout the fall and winter, October 4th and 5th. I am going to be at Atlantic City Comedy Club in Atlantic City, New Jersey. The 26th, I will be at Fairfield Comedy Club in Connecticut. And keep an eye on the website for more dates. I have chosen to take some time off going on the road so much. This summer was, it's just nice to be home. Dick's was great. I went out to fish for 3 nights in Colorado. My first time at Dick's Sporting Goods Arena, or whatever you want to call it, Dick's Sporting Goods Park. It's a stadium. It's a small stadium if you've never been there. If you have been there, it's cool. It was fun. It was 3 fish shows. It wasn't anything spectacular. I don't know. Maybe I went out there thinking that it was going to be something mind-blowing with the whole, you know, basically what happened for those of you that aren't in the fish world that are listening to this, they had a prairie dogs with plague fleas that had the plague in them, infestation, and they basically had to like cut out camping and cut out Shakedown Alley. We call it Shakedown Street, but the suits called it Shakedown Alley. Basically, that's where we take over an entire chunk of the parking lot and turn it into an open air market where you can buy anything from DMT to crystals to grilled cheese. And we had to not have that, but there was still a ton of fun shit. There was a huge Shakedown. I bought a bunch of cool t-shirts and it was a good time. It was an expensive weekend. I drank like a fish. $33 for 2 beers. That's all I really remember from the fish concerts was $33 for 2 beers. They should allow us to just bring beer in. I know that they would never make any money, but man, fucking $33 for 2 beers is crazy. Yeah, this summer was incessant travel. Just it takes a lot out of you when you're just like constantly on the road, in and out of airports. I did quite a bit of the early part of Fish Tour. I did like kind of on and off for 3 weeks, you know, from end of June through like 4th of July and on, and then headed out to Portland, Oregon to do shows at Helium Comedy Club in Portland with Adam Carolla, which was a lot of fun. Adam, known for the Adam Carolla Show, the Man Show, Loveline with Dr. Drew. He is going on a tour doing stand-up where he basically, it's pretty unique. He's got about 15 minutes of material that's written, and then he has a bingo ball, like a wheel, one of those kind of like roly old like bingo counter ball things, and he has the crowd write words on the balls, and he pulls them out and then just riffs off of it. And I think that's pretty good marketing, because if you're a huge Adam Carolla fan, I like anything that keeps people coming back for more. Just like why for Fish, I like to never miss a show because every set's different. Adam Carolla's pulling, you know, ping pong balls out and riffing off words is different. Not one show is the same. So if you wrote a word on a ball, he may call it third night. So I think there were a lot of repeat customers, and Helium in Portland, Oregon is an amazing club. And I just love Portland. That's when I went out and did my interview with Ken Babbs. It's just a really nice, refreshing part of the country. I really like it out there. And there's a lot that I'd like to see that I haven't had the chance to see. So that's a part of the country I would like to visit much more. Without comedy, even. I mean, with comedy is nice, but I'd like to just, you know, hit it and see some parks, and there's some beautiful nature out there and some shit that I'd like to do. An Alaskan cruise is really, I think, what I'd like to do. Then I went from there to the Island Eye Casino to work with the Impractical Jokers in Washington State. And that's always a blast. I mean, doing any shows with the Jokers is always a great time because it's such a huge crowd, and I don't know, they're just such awesome fans. Then I came back to the city for a little while, and then I headed to Las Vegas, Nevada, where I was there for a week, and it was a long week, and it was a hot week, and I did the Comedy Cellar at the Rio. Vegas as a city, whatever, I guess. I don't know. I would, once again, there's some beautiful nature around there, and I would like to go and do some hiking, but not in 116 degrees. Mikey got a bald head, and it burns easy. So next time I go out there, I'm hoping it'll be a little bit cooler. But it's hard to stay in a rhythm and get healthy. So that was like West Coast time, and then back to East Coast, then back to West Coast like a week later. and I did the week out there. Then headed to the Borgata in Atlantic City to do the gigs there. All the gigs are a blast. The comedy is the easy part, and that was a drive. That wasn't a flight. I think I've gotten to a point where, like, if I drive somewhere, I don't consider it travel. For me now, travel is getting on a plane, just going to the airport. And you know what I did? I looked at the calendar around this point in August and was just like, Jesus Christ, I'm not even like halfway done with the shit that I have to do. So did the Borgata, did the Music Box. That's a 922 seat room. And we do four shows, 20 minutes a night, me and two other comics. And it's great. Again, the crowds are a lot of fun. That's a little bit of an older crowd, a lot older, but hey, you know what? Like, everybody is a crowd. I was getting heckled by an old woman who I told her that I wanted to make love to her, and she said that I didn't have enough experience. She was about 80-something years old. It was really fun. Once-in-a-lifetime experiences when you're up on stage telling jokes and you're open to that moment of just breaking balls with the crowd. That's what I like, I think, the most about doing what I do. But this is right around when Mike started to grow his tits and top gut. I started to eat like a pig. Not really into drinking and gambling alone. That's not something fun to me. I don't really have any desire to, like, drink and then wander around a casino by myself. If I'm at a show with friends, yeah, of course I'm going to party. But if I'm by myself, I end up just going back to the room and eating like a piece of garbage. And the Borgata's got real good food. They have like an Italian market down in the, anybody who lives in New York and has ever heard of Italy, I think it's like Mario Batali's place or something, Italy, but with E-A-T instead of the I, just incredible fresh, like prosciutto and provolone and like good bread and good cheese and oil and olives and all that. Like, they had that downstairs, and I would go down and get like muffalata sandwiches every day. And then they had Ben and Jerry's, so a couple times I would double up, get my sandwich, and then I would go get a waffle cone with two scoops of non-dairy almond fudge coconut, whatever the fuck. It's amazing. It's just so good. And then I would go upstairs and sadly take a nap. So around mid-August, I started to really turn into a pile of garbage. And then I came back to New York. I had a bunch of shows for 2-3 days, said hi to my family. And then I got on a plane and headed to Los Angeles, California, 3 days later, where I had a chance to do a couple cool things. I did a set at the Comedy Store in Hollywood, California, a very legendary club. This is my first time being out in Los Angeles doing comedy, and it was a blast. I went out with Big J. Okerson and Luis Gomez and Shane Gillis and Dave Smith and Justin Silver, and trying to think of anybody else from the East Coast. There was a bunch of people out there at the time, but Legion of Skanks kind of group, bonfire group, and we did shows at the store, and the crowds were out, man. It was a good time. And then I went up to Glendale, California after that. Well, let's talk about the Comedy Store first. The Comedy Store is like, there's three rooms. Most comedy clubs only just have like one room or two, maybe, an upstairs, a downstairs. Gotham Comedy Club in New York City has two rooms. The Village Underground and the Fat Black Pussycat, where I'm at a lot with the Comedy Cellar, that's right around the corner from the Cellar, they have two rooms. But the Store is like a treehouse. They have one room out in the back that's like up top. I think they call it the belly room. Then there's the main room and the original room. And the original room is like, it's like a museum. It's really like a comedy museum. And it's kind of eerily awesome to go walk around the empty rooms while there's no shows going on. Like, I went to check out the main room with Jeff Ross, Tony Hinchcliffe, a couple other guys that are there all the time. They kind of showed me around the space. And it was really neat. Just, I don't know. It's like being in a museum. Sometimes doing comedy, you kind of forget, like, this is a very short history. Comedy's only been, you know, 1900s or whatever. And and stand-up comedy is very new art form. So it's kind of wild to check out some of that stuff. I stayed for the first time at a VRBO, vacation rental by owner, and it stunk. It was an A-frame in a guy's driveway, and he said it was fully air-conditioned, and I got in there, and it was definitely not fully air-conditioned, and I had to call him and say, hey, can you tell me how to turn on the air conditioning? And he said, I'll be over in a minute and show you how to install it. And I said, I have to install the air conditioner. And he rolled out one of those kind of mobile R2-D2 looking air conditioners and a piece of sheet metal with a hole in it for the exhaust pipe. And I had to put the exhaust pipe in the window and magnetize the sheet metal to a vent in the top of this A-frame that was 1,000 degrees. And every time I touched the piece of sheet metal, it would burn my hand and slide off. So I said, you know what? Fuck this. So I told him I need my money back, or else, you know, I'm not really one that likes to leave a scathing review, but if we could, you know, refund my money and I'll go to a hotel. And it worked out great. So after doing the store, I headed up to Glendale, California, and I visited Adam Carolla's podcast, and I sat with him and bullshitted a little bit about the Impractical Jokers and about fish. And it was a short interview, but a lot of fun. And thank you to Adam Carolla for having me on his show, and for all the fans that listened that liked it. You can find that on YouTube and all that stuff. So thanks to Adam. After that, I headed down to Venice. And Venice, California is pretty cool. I think if I were going to LA is New York City. It's just a big Times Square. I'm not a big Hollywood. I don't know. It was cool. Nothing against it, but it's just, you know, it's where everything is. Same with New York City. It's just that kind of busy, you know, everybody's walking around with blinders on kind of thing. I think that it was weird because I didn't know who was homeless and crazy and talking to themselves, or who was just like ripped and not wearing a shirt and going over lines for an upcoming audition. Everybody was kind of either tan or dusty. You can't tell sometimes. And I liked getting out of the city and going down to Venice. It's got this really cool, laid-back kind of, I don't know, like a beachy vibe, of course, because it was right on the fucking beach. That's a real smart, insightful thing to say. But it was fun. I did a couple comedy shows down there. My friend Bronston runs a great show at a old speakeasy called Townhouse, called Venice Underground Comedy. And every Wednesday, I think he's done like 400 shows in a row. It's very hard to have an independent show run that long and be that successful. And it was great. It was packed. Tom Rhodes was on the show. A bunch of really awesome comics were on the show. Thanks to Bronston for having me. And it was super fun. And then I flew back home to New York. And I did a couple of shows. And then I did the Allentown State Fair with the Impractical Jokers in front of a couple thousand folks. Again, always a treat to do that. And then right back on a plane out to Denver for 3 nights at Dick's Sporting Goods Park for fish. And again, I liked it. There were a couple highlights, a couple definite lowlights. 3 nights is hard to do, and I'm getting tired. And it's fun, and it's great, but it's work, man. Drinking every night. And you know what I was doing too? I was eating a lot of pretzels in between beers. So like I would go get a pretzel for, you know, dinner or whatever to bring back to my group. And I would get two. I would get one to eat on my way. And then I would sneak one. I would eat one as fast as humanly possible. And then, you know, I was getting fat and tired. Being on the road makes me fat and tired. But I stuck around. Hung out with my little brother and did a hike, hung out at his place, and then I headlined Comedy Works one of the best clubs in the world. Thank you to the staff and everybody who came out to see the show at Comedy Works in Greenwood Village. And then we came back, and travel is pretty much wrapped up for a while, and I need it. I need to plant my heels here in New York, and I've got a lot of notes and a lot of jokes and a lot of stuff for that needs work, that needs tinkering, and I'm excited to work on it. So keep an eye on my website for dates. And got a couple cool concerts that I'm going to. I'm going to go see Dweezil Zappa tonight playing Hot Rats, my favorite Zappa album probably, at Fairfield Theater Works in Connecticut. I don't know where it is, but I'm going to that. Excited to catch up with some buddies and go see that show. I've been on a little bit of a really big Zappa kick. And I'm going to have my friend Joe DeRosa on the podcast soon to talk about nerding out on Zappa and how some people get it and some people don't. And then what? Wilco coming up. The Impractical Joker Cruise I'm going to be on. If you guys are interested, you go to Google Impractical Joker Cruise. This is my third year doing it. It's such a blast. If you're a fan of the TV show, I started another season writing for Inside Jokes. So if you go to True TV and, you know, the Impractical Jokers is on all the time, and some of the episodes have little fact bubbles that pop up, and that's my show. I'm the head writer for that show, so I write all those facts, and it's always a blast, and I'm happy to be a part of that family. And head over to the website if you guys are interested in going on the cruise. The comedy is amazing. Chris DiStefano is going to be on the cruise this year. Jim Brewer, Ron Bennington, Ryan Hamilton, myself, Joe List, Joyelle Johnson, a whole bunch of great people, and the Jokers, my good pals, the Jokers. So that's my summer, and I'm glad it's over, and I like travel, and I love what I did. It was just a phenomenal summer, but it was just a lot of travel, and I'm happy to put the suitcase away for a little while and just hunker down in the East Coast, bring you some good Amigos episodes and some good comedy. So while on the road this summer, I had the chance to have a quick conversation, about 20 minutes, with Carl Denson, incredibly talented musician, band leader. I'm Carl Denson's Tiny Universe, the Grey Boy All-Stars. He's the touring saxophone player for the Rolling Stones. And that's where I caught up with him, was this summer. He was in between dates and hanging out in New York City while I was somewhere on the West Coast, and we had a quick phone conversation. I remember seeing Carl Denson's Tiny Universe, like, early festivals. First Bonnaroo, Gathering of the Vibes in Connecticut, which I had the founder of Gathering of the Vibes, Ken Hayes, on my old podcast, Jamcast, and that was just an institution. It was right 25, 30 minutes down the road from where I grew up. And, I mean, just some of the amazing musicians I saw on that stage. And I mean, we saw Phil, we saw Primus, we saw a bunch of great stuff, but Carl Denson's Tiny Universe and the Grey Boy All-Stars were so fun and so funky and always like a high energy, pick me up, good time. He has a new album out, Gnomes and Badgers, which is a little bit of a deviation from the normal. Carl does more singing on this album. It's politically driven, for sure, which I support. And I want to make sure that everybody knows where to find his dates. He's touring heavily at the moment. He's out in Crystal Bay, Nevada, California, Tennessee, Macon, Georgia. A lot of dates coming up. I mean, all over the country. Then back east in October. Yeah, so head to carldenson.com to check out all his dates. And we talk about playing different rooms, big rooms versus small rooms, being a band leader versus being with the Stones, touring with the Stones, a whole bunch of cool stuff, politically driven music, what Carl's listening to these days. I'm not 100% thrilled with the interview, but I never like a phone interview. I like to sit with someone face-to-face and get a vibe for them, even if it's the first time talking to him. I think you guys would be amazed how many interviews you listen to on podcasts where it's the first time that those people are even meeting. I'd say most of my podcasts have been with guests who I've never even met. And we have to kind of like instantly gain a rapport and a vibe and learn how not to step on each other's toes and words and get rhythms down and all that shit. So, it's interesting. So this is, it's a phone conversation with, me and Carl Denson. I hope you guys enjoy it. And, thank you as always for listening, and I'll catch you next week with another episode. Peace.
Hey there, this is Kyle Hollingsworth. You're listening to Amigos with Mike Fenoya on the Osiris Network.
Yes, exactly.
So you're getting to spend some time in New York City. That's great. You are a busy man right now.
Yes, you're, I am.
Traveling around with the Stones, traveling around with Tiny Universe. Everything's going great. How's the Rolling Stones tour going?
It's going wonderful. Yeah, it's my paid vacation is what I call it.
Yeah.
We work two days a week. So, you know, sit around in five-star hotels and work 2 days a week. So
yeah,
can't beat that.
It's pretty amazing. The venues that you guys are playing are pretty wonderful too. And I'm always wondering what it feels like to look out on an audience that size. From your perspective, looking out, what kind of enthralling or thrilling feeling is that for you?
It's the fact that it's every night with those guys makes it, you know, the more incredible. Just the amount of love that those guys engender, you know.
Yeah.
And then because for me it's like really the audience is second tier to being on stage with those four guys, you know. So I'm kind of like a part of the audience in a way.
Sure, I understand completely.
You know, like I'm just as freaking freaked out as they are, except that I've been there every night, and so it's just. You know, it's just really just being part of the spectacle is pretty amazing.
And, you know, it's amazing to see Mick. You catch videos of him bouncing around like he's a kid. It's really unbelievable.
Yes, exactly. The guy is unbelievable.
When you're looking out in the crowd, are you seeing you're catching a varied age group from, you know, fans that grew up with the Stones to, you know, their probably grandchildren, right? Coming as a family.
Yep. For sure.
It's got to be such an amazing feeling to see.
It is. It's really cool. Like, you know, to see somebody 70 years old, you know, come in with their 40-year-old daughter and their, you know, 30-year-old granddaughter, and you know, it's really cool.
Yeah,
they're
man.
They're all buying gear. You know, it's like this is my fifth Rolling Stones concert. You know, it's a granddad's 85th, you know. It's cool.
Yeah, it's really wild, you know. And it's great you get to tour with them, but also I'm a huge fan all the way back to the days of, you know, the early Bonnaroo, the Burke Fest, the Gathering of the Vibes. I mean, I used to catch you with you know, Tiny Universe and Grey Boy and all that, and you've always been such a thrill to watch, and I'm so happy to see all the success for you. So
thank you very much.
I'm very happy. And you guys are, Gnomes and Badgers came out, and it's a great album. And it's, as you mentioned earlier in the beginning of our conversation, you were having some political conversations with your friends.
Yes.
The album's hard hitting, and the album's great. And I'm very happy to see artists, you know, putting their brain and their heart into their material. And you definitely do that with this album.
Yeah, I feel like it came together pretty well. I'm really happy with it.
Do you find that, you know, moments like this in time, events, circumstances, you know, we've all lived through some pretty dicey times and stuff. Do you feel like that gets your juices flowing creatively?
Yeah. Yeah, over the years. I mean, I'm kind of a political junkie, and where we are right now is very disturbing. You know, it's like... you know, you always, it's comforting when I hear, you know, people like, you know, John Meacham, you know, the presidential historian and people like that say that, you know, they've seen it worse, you know, there's been worse in history. But I think with the connectivity of the internet and the bad feelings that we have towards each other right now. You know, it's we need to really speak up and try to help ourselves out of this mess.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's important for artists to, you know, not be polarizing and be, you know, a beacon of hope and someone
right.
to share the togetherness. And music, our music, always seems to have had that at its core from the start.
Right.
What was the process in the studio? You said you liked how it all came together. Can you go through?
It was pretty arduous. I'm really praying that I can streamline this next record. But I feel like, you know, I've been trying to learn how to write. I am a jazz guy by nature.
Right.
So, and then, you know, I started doing the All Stars and, you know, and so kind of started singing a bit more. And, you know, and so then the Tiny Universe was really about singing, but it was always just kind of a vehicle for improvisation. And for this record, I feel like I was trying to finally, you know, get really deep into the, you know, songwriting process of writing lyrics and melodies, you know, and song structure for you know more pop music in that way, and I feel like it came along really well, but it took a long time. It took a lot of work, and so I'm hoping that the next record I'm going to play a lot more saxophone on the next record, but I feel like, you know, I'm moving forward from the lesson of learning how to write, you know, song form in this way, that I will be able to kind of, you know, put the whole thing together, this next record. So
it was
a lot of work.
Yeah, I mean, and I definitely noticed that with this album, that it was definitely more lyrically driven, which I was happy to hear.
Yeah, you know what, we needed those songs, because, you know, I'm a live artist by nature, so I really just needed a lot of new lyrical content for my shows. So that's been really fun that we've got, you know, a half a dozen easy tunes to throw into the set now that are vocal driven.
Yes, that's fantastic. You know, I've been studying quite a bit about what, you know, our music fans, the jam scene, the jazz scene, the rock scene, funk. We have a special relationship, the audience and the musician. And the performer, regardless of who it is. And I wanted to get your take on the interplay between the audience, how they fuel you while you're on stage. Sometimes the audience play the band night after night, venue after venue. Do you find that there's a common thread between the audience and the musician?
Yeah, for sure. I think, the jam scene, It's interesting because it's kind of started to be more and more kind of driven by the, you know, the Grateful Dead, the Fish mentality, you know,
mm-hmm.
which you know, the Dead especially are very improvisational, you know.
Yep.
And so I really like that I've got an audience that likes improvisation, and they like it as free as you can make it, which is something that I'm always trying to push my band into more of, like, realizing, you know what, they want to hear free improv, you know, they want to hear you take some chances and not just play the same thing. So I think that's kind of the bond that we have with the audience, is that they really want to come and see what you have to say personally every day. It's not like a pop audience where they just want to come hear the tunes. It's like they want to hear what you have to say today.
Right.
Which I love.
Yeah, and I think the thing that's beautiful about that is what you have to say today may not necessarily be what you have to say tomorrow.
Yes, exactly.
And those moments happen, and that's so incredible. When you're out on the open seas on the jam cruise that you've performed on quite a bit, can you encapsulate that vibe and how that feels? Has it got the same festival feel, or, you know, interaction with the fans and the artists?
Well, it's a festival feel, but the best part of it is you're eating you know, and drinking with the artist. So we're all just on there together, and you know, you'll see, you know, the bands in the hall and in the elevator, and you're talking to them, and then you see them play, and then there's a lot of commingling of the bands. You know, that's one of the best things, is that they've got a couple of jam rooms where the artists get together and hit together. You know, it's really a fun way to see music, and it's nonstop. You know, there's something going on all the time.
Yeah, the jam cruises are always a blast, and there's always something for the folks to do. Sometimes the most entertaining moments happen at the buffet.
Right.
I'm watching some of the folks. So when if you for music fans that are out there listening right now that are wanting to become more involved with what's going on in the political world, do you have any advice for them? Do you have any guidance for any of the listeners as to how to get more involved in what's happening in our country today?
Well, you know, the gnomes and badgers idea is really just critical thinking and being civil. I think that's where we need to be as a world. Is you know, get out of the freaking chat, out of the comment group sections of the internet, and talk to your friends and family, and be civil, and use critical thinking.
Yeah. Is there anybody out there that you're listening to right now that you're loving, that's blowing you away musically?
Man, I have three playlists that I'm working with right now. One of them is an Afrobeat. One of them is a hip hop playlist, which is like J. Cole and Killer Mike, Mos Def, Kendrick Lamar.
Nice.
You know, Drake. And then I've got a girls playlist that's like Joni Mitchell and hold on, my phone's frozen. I call it the Boho Zone. It's like Joni Mitchell and the first Macy Gray record.
Oh wow, yeah.
Which I love, and LaBelle.
Wow, yeah.
You know, like Phoenix and Chameleon.
Yeah, man, records. Absolutely, yeah.
And then I got an Afrobeat, which is Fela and Ebo Taylor and Paul Thomas. It's like a high life Afrobeat playlist.
That's amazing. Yeah, Fela Kuti's Zombie is probably one of the my go-to albums start to finish. There's like those handful of albums that you can listen to start to finish.
Exactly.
That album is just unbelievable. When you're out on the road with the Stones, do you get a chance to chill much with the guys, or is it pretty much you're all in silos at this point?
Yeah, we're kind of in our silos right now. We really hang out, do the most hanging out during rehearsals. You know, we're rehearsing for a couple of weeks, and then once we get on the road, we pretty much just see each other on show day.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. Do you like coming through New York? Are you you're not currently based out of New York City, right? You're out of California still.
I'm out of San Diego, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Do you like New York City?
I like it for a small amount of time.
I know. I hear you.
It's too much. It's too much for a California kid. I really like I like my space.
Yeah.
This place is a little overwhelming for long periods of time.
It definitely is, and you know, living there, I live in Queens, but it's even that gets to be a little bit. Leaving's the best part of living in New York.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Are there any venues that you have come across that even, you know, with Carl Denson's Tiny Universe, with the Trio, with the Stones, any venues that are favorites of yours around the country?
Yeah, there's a bunch, man. We just played Talia Hall for for the first time in Chicago, which is a great venue. I love that place. I love my hometown place. The Belly Up is one of my favorites all time, and not just because it's home. It's a really great venue. Tipitina's in New Orleans, and you know Galactic just bought that place, and they're doing a great job just updating it and making it better. There's a gang of them.
Yeah,
I love Irving Plaza here in New York, and the Bowery Ballroom and Roseland is an awesome place.
Now, as a saxophone player, what do you look for in a room when you're playing? Do you like the low ceilings and the tight jazz hall of it? I know you're playing now in football stadiums, all the way down to jazz.
I like old rooms. They generally reflect better.
Yeah.
So I like usually when the horn players or the singers like the room, the guitar players and drummers don't.
Oh. Because
we like rooms that reflect. They like rooms that absorb.
Oh, that's very interesting.
Yeah, because, you know, in a room that reflects, even if it's really loud, I can still hear my horn coming off the back wall. In a room that absorbs, I'm just stuck inside of the guitar amp or the bass drum.
That's very interesting. Yeah, so some of the old jazz rooms must be so interesting. Are there any rooms you haven't played that you're dying to play? Well, soon.
You know, I mean, I think, you know, I played most of the places now, you know, so now it's just a matter of upping the ante where I'm doing it on my terms.
Right. Yes, I hear you. So with the new album, you said you're, I'll end it with this. I don't want to take up too much of your time today. I appreciate your time, Carl.
Don't worry.
With the new album, how far along are you? Is it, just getting started? Do you have any plans with any collaborations?
I'm just getting started on it. I've got a lot of songs already, but fleshing them out is going to be the big process. I think I'm starting to think, because of the way everything is right now, I think I'm going to be aiming for a couple of EPs as opposed to a full-length record. So I'll, and with that, I kind of get some freedom where I can kind of, you know, instead of having a bunch of ideas on one record, do a couple of things that are like, you know, a little more streamlined. So I think it's probably going to be an EP year next year.
Nice. Oh, that's really cool, man. And it looks like you've got a very stacked tour schedule coming up. So you're a very busy man. And
I need to winnow some of that down so I can have time to really write. So that'll be the juggling act.
Do you tend to get a lot of writing done on the road, or are you someone who you get home, you sit down, you're in your, you know, home space, and then you start to write?
I need a lot of time to gestate.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I need a lot of downtime. Like I found being out with the Stones is really nice for the last record, because once I had the basic tracks done and it was time for, like, you know, vocals and lyrics and overdubs, I had, I'd be in Europe for 2 months and, you know, have nothing to do for 5 days a week but take walks and listen to the record. So it was really fun, you know, walking and listening to the record and having an idea and writing it down and, you know, do that every day for a couple of hours. And that made things happen. So that's kind of what I'm doing now.
That's awesome, man. Well, you know, we're all looking forward to it, and, I've been a fan for a very long time, and I'm looking forward to many more years. So,
hey, Mike, really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. And if you wanted to share real quick where everybody can find all things Carl Denson, please feel free.
You know, you can go to my Facebook or Instagram, Carl Denson's Tiny Universe, or carldenson.us.
Awesome. Well, listen, enjoy New York and enjoy the tour, and hope to catch up with you soon.
Hey, thank you so much for taking the time.
Oh, of course, man. You too. Take care.
Appreciate it.
Bye-bye. Adios, amigos.